For June the 12th, 2020, we talk about the Dread X Collection, For the King, and we ask you which video games should be made into board games. Welcome to Level 332. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meinsmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome one, welcome all. Welcome back after a particularly heavy episode last week. I don't have much more to say other than I hope everybody has been safe. I want to thank anybody who's listening who has either gone out to events to demonstrate or has provided any kind of support or shared with me any kind of like article or thing of interest. All of that has been has contributed to at least me feeling like I have a little bit better of a grasp of what's happening here. But most of all, I hope you're all safe. And I have no more anecdotes related to that. I could talk about my bird nest problem, but maybe that comes later. I don't know.
are you going to make bird nest problem soup?
No. I guess bird nest soup is like one of those things like Italian wedding soup that is like a significant soup that I should know, but I don't.
It's right on the page. Yeah, there's not a lot to it. It is what it says it is.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would not want to make soup out of the bird's nest that I'm dealing with right now. Maybe the birds there's some nutrition there, but a lot of the nest is mud.
What if you were doing it to spite the bird that put it there?
I also don't want to do that. So I guess I'll go into it.
So
it's not
a blue jay. Because the blue jay would deserve it.
Yes. Although there are blue jays that live in my neighborhood, none are nesting on my property. Is a good thing. I've got critter problems. So basically, all of last year and then all of this spring, there's been a robin who really likes building a nest on the light by my front door. You know, it's like an old style. Just like porch light that's there. It's under the overhang. And, you know, I would just wake up in the morning and walk out and look up and I would see that there's some mud and some twigs there and leaves and things like that. And so I put on some gloves and I pull it down and then I would go about my day. I've been so distracted over the past, let's say week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, something like that, that I didn't really go and take parts of the nest down. And the time I realized that the nest was mostly complete, there were some ding dang old blue eggs in there.
Got a roommate now.
Yeah. So I'm not going to take a nest with eggs in it. Like robins are not necessarily endangered. It's not like it would break the law, but like, I don't know. Seems like a dick move. So yeah.
You gotta love the persistence of like, it was unable to make progress in that specific location for, it sounds like a while. And I'm reminded of the other guys seeing we will have sex in your car. We will build nests on your door.
Yeah. So, just dumb instinct. There was something especially attractive about that light. I wish it luck. I think one of the eggs hatched. I heard some beeping this morning. I think that there are three or four of them. I've just left it alone. The bad part is that it's right outside my bedroom window. So I'm going to, robins, American robins, they fledge for about 2 weeks. So after about 16 days at most, I should be good.
Cole, you need to sleep in a shorter period of time than 2 weeks, though.
I mean, I'll be able to sleep, and if it's bad enough, I'll just go sleep on the couch. The interesting thing will be how Greta reacts to it, because I don't know how much she how much time she has spent outdoors where she will process the beeping of baby birds as, hey, that's prey.
Yeah.
So we'll figure it out. But yeah, I got critter problems, mostly because I do not have the heart to unhouse a bird who has started the process of having kids.
Look, you will have to live with the birds, yes, but you'll also be able to live with yourself.
True.
No. So a couple years back, my martial arts instructor was teaching at his house, and around Christmas time they had a wreath on their door, and they just on their front door, and they just, you know, left it up or whatever, and mm-hmm. So a bird decided to build its nest on in kind of the hole in the wreath. So the problem was that it would just flip out anytime they use their front door.
Well, yeah, because you have to open it up and it swings the whole nest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm amazed it didn't eventually decide to move, but it was bound and determined.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they just get that way. It's something I will stop going on about this fucking bird. It's weird how comfortable it is with me being close to it. You know, the mom is just kind of sits in the nest, all puffy and glassy eyed, kind of like me, actually, puffy and glassy eyed. and it just kind of looks, you know, like it's just very like kind of not there. But the second I take out my camera, or might take up my phone to take a picture of it, it flies away. Yeah, it processes that as a threat. So I'm not able to get even a little bit of social media content out of this. And I think that's the true injustice here.
It knows you're trying to steal its soul.
Yeah.
You pay rent in likes.
Bird is the one that tweets. Yeah.
So that's me. How are you doing, Ben?
I'm doing okay. I talked about this in the pre-roll, but Seattle's a little bit nuts right now. Police are having a good old time throwing tear gas on people and seem to do it on every other day basis. In the and the hot news of today, apparently the police are moving out of the station that's in Capitol Hill, which is like where they've had kind of like standoffs for the last week.
Okay.
I'm watching like a live stream on it, so if my internet's bad, apologies. We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
I'll let you know if that affects it, but also it seems pretty, like, I think that's something you want to keep tabs on, maybe?
Yeah, this is like a mile away from my place, so I have a little bit of a vested interest in it.
Civil unrest in your city seems to be worth keeping an eye on. Yeah.
Yeah.
That
a bit of packet loss so you can know when they're coming for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's awful that they're continuing to tear gas people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. David, how are you doing, bud?
Well, speaking of unrest in your city.
So
this past week has been kind of crazy here in New York City. You know, we've been under curfew at 8 o'clock and, you know, protests going all over. Most notably, one right outside my door.
At City Hall, right?
Tuesday? Yeah. Because I live pretty close to City Hall.
Not to dox you. I didn't mean to do that. But
oh, no, that's fine.
Yeah.
And so, that's been kind of crazy. I haven't been anywhere that, you know, there's actually been rioting or like tear gas or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, that has been a thing that's been happening.
Yeah.
You know, there's been a lot of police helicopters, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. On the plus side, one like hopeful thing I saw that was pretty funny was some of the like two police officers giving people directions to the protest.
I don't know, that's cool.
Yeah and likewise, I think so I've gone to a couple of them, not a ton, but you know,
you shared some pictures of stuff getting kind of real.
Yeah so I've gone out to some, and it's funny because it's very obvious a lot of the people there have like not done a protest before. Like there is definitely a learning curve to like, all right, how does this whole like call and response thing work? And
shit, that's pretty exciting if there are a bunch of newbies who need direction. Exactly. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Actually, that's a perfect segue for newbies that need protest direction.
Yeah, yeah. What's going on, Dennis?
David, not to swoop you, so we can.
Oh,
we can
no, go for
cycle
it.
Back. This is too good to leave out. My neighbor is a sweet older lady, and she happens to go to the same church as us. And this past Sunday, my church was like, "Hey, instead of doing a service, we're all going to go protest."
That's awesome.
So I got a call from my neighbor like, "Would you drive me to the protest?" it was the most adorable protest.
Were you worried? Like, because you're kind of responsible for her at that point.
Yeah, well, no, I'm she's a bit more capable than I make her out to be.
Yeah, but, okay. The voice painted a picture.
Yeah. She was not hobbling anywhere, we'll right, say. Right. But no, yeah, I mean, it was a very chill affair overall.
Mm-hmm.
But good to spend some time, and that it certainly, you know, the first COVID and now this is made you be more conscious of your literal neighbors. So
yeah,
it was cool to bond with her over like, yeah, you know, this is different generations, but we can all appreciate that there's something going on here that needs to be addressed and has for a long time. So
yeah,
it was a good experience and some bonding that I was not expecting on a Sunday.
Very cool.
And when she started throwing Molotovs at the cops, I just couldn't believe it.
But yeah, no. good on you. A little bit more hardcore than I would have personally gone. Yeah. But you got anger's anger.
Where'd you get a trident?
You better lay low for a while. Oh, geez. Yeah. Cool. Well.
So.
Oh, good.
Oh, sorry. I was just gonna say. I mean, what do you guys think? Does it seem like things are maybe getting better from this in that like it does seem like there's maybe some changes being made?
The way that I'm looking at it is that every kind of new thing that happens, so like was it last night, Minneapolis, the city hall, we're recording this on Monday, June the 8th, just in case this has moved really fast, they announced, hey, we're gonna dissolve the police. We're gonna dissolve the police department. Kind of responding to a lot of the popular demand, responding to the protest. That like any little move like that, is a new start. You know, like okay, this is a new start. Like none of this is goals. It's not. I personally cannot let myself think, okay, work is done, because it's not. And also I've not done a lot of work involved in this. So it'd be weird for me to say, hey, work's done. You kind of fucked up, really. but like, I don't
know.
Would
you say mission accomplished? Would that ring a little better?
No. And I'll let you guys say this, because, you know, I'm observing a lot of this from afar. I'm noticing a distinct turn in the conversation and the coverage and the way that this is being talked about. And I like specifically the way that the demonstrations are being covered. I'm seeing an awful lot less kind of concern trolling about looting and things like that, and more focus on the message. And I think that is a function of a lot of people with a lot of skin in the game working very hard for a very long time, and America not really being used to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say the one I've seen more positive headlines, right? But talk is just that.
Yeah.
Talk. And never doubt the patience of evil people, like a bird determined to build their nest in the door. Like it takes a lot of persistence, and that you will be surprised.
All the status quo has to do is sit there.
Mm-hmm,
yeah, exactly. It was kind of disheartening seeing, I don't know if any of you guys watched Trump's press secretary today.
No.
Where she basically said like, yeah, we don't think that what is it, whatever immunity
Was it categorical immunity or conditional? Yeah, and the Supreme Court is arguing about it, but I've forgotten the exact word.
Yeah, yeah, but she basically said, like, yeah, we don't think that needs to change. Like, I guess sort of what struck me with that is, like, generally speaking, as much as I think Trump is, like, an evil person, I generally tend to think he's mostly just, like, this specific person that happened to be come in charge of, like, an evil system.
Yeah, this is definitely not about him. He is not making it better, and
what I was thinking is, like, what struck me as weird is just, like, just the, I guess this struck me as very specifically an instance where it's like, you could make this better, you have nothing to gain from not making this better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're strictly doing this just because you want to. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't watch speeches or press conferences from this White House. Like, I cannot observe them directly. It's kind of like an eclipse, which is funny because he stared straight into the sun. No, I've got to get it through headlines afterwards because I kind of can't stand the dog and pony show.
It turned a corner for me, like, when the COVID stuff happened, because I'm like, oh, like, you don't have, like, some, like, ultimate plan here. You're just, like, really dumb. Like you can't process, like, basic facts or basic data, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not trying to sound, like, holier than thou or whatever, but...
No, it's... They've demonstrated it very clearly.
I mean, it's built on the fact, like, on such the assumption that everything will run okay, and so we're going to be completely focused on the maneuvering.
Yeah.
Yeah, that when you actually have something of substance to do, there's nothing there but maneuvering.
Yeah.
And I mean, part of it is that is their belief system. Like, that's basically the Republican platform is, you know, things will be fine as long as you don't do anything.
Right.
And I think there's, like, somewhat of a divide there. Like, even, like, a day or two ago, George W. Bush said he wasn't going to endorse Trump. So it's like, that's a positive thing, I think.
Anytime he's brought up, it kind of complicates things. But, like, I don't know, like, the fact that you also see, like, Mitt Romney marching, that just, like, it's not enough. Like, he fanned enough racial hatred in his own ways. But, like, just the fact that they're out there, the fact that they're saying this stuff, the fact that they need to be seen doing this stuff means that the wind is blowing possibly in a favorable direction. And that, that's not nothing, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's.
Yeah, I'm back on my hope bullshit, boys.
man. So I it like that. Good.
Oh, I was just going to say, it is interesting, like, doing the numbers and, like, with coronavirus, if it is true, the study that found that, like, something like 80 to 90% of deaths could have been prevented, that would mean Trump is responsible for more American deaths than any other president in U.S. history, with the exception of
wartime presidents.
Well, and not just wartime presidents, but only the Civil War and the World War II.
No,
not World War One.
World War One was something over 100,000.
Yeah, we're approaching World War One right now. Well, the thing that I always have to remind myself about World War One is, like, that was a 5-year long war that America came in at the last 2 months, like, did a little bit, and then, like, did an end zone dance and said, fuck yeah.
Well, and it's also, like, even though a lot of those are, kind of murky, you know, Civil War and World War II, not so much, but, like, World War One, a little ambiguous, Vietnam War, kind of iffy, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like, those were still wars when basically, like, there was at least some good reason to fight, as opposed to coronavirus. It's just, like, people are dying just because.
Yeah. And I don't want anybody to to think that we're saying that coronavirus is Trump's fault. I'm not giving him credit for anything, and I'm also not trying to ding him for stuff. It would happen, but like specifically the response being so bad. I'm probably going to usher us along because we're not a political podcast primarily. Yet. This is obviously we stuff that's. I don't feel equipped for that.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but
that hasn't stopped a lot of other people.
right. You know,
hasn't
even
stopped Trump.
Yeah, also hasn't stopped me on Twitter. So yeah, you know, I get angry. Specifically about like the protests and stuff, I want to hear from people in the community who have gone out and done that stuff, or if there's anything you want us to help signal boost, like if we are going to use this space to talk about what's going on, and there's something you want us to get the word out about, reach out, let me know, or if there's something that I get wrong or things that that would be good for me to read. I'm kind of voracious for this kind of stuff right now. I've got a reading list right now, so we can use our we do not just have to ruminate. We can at least use the platform for good. But the platform is usually for platformers. Platformer video games. I don't know. That feels pretty hollow.
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Can you explain that one a little bit more?
did it need to be cornier? Did I need to do something cornier?
You're doing good.
Okay. You put like a little rim shot in there, or make some duck noises.
So we've got the usual kind of show for you. We've got the brief, the multiplayer and the grind. Oh wait, no, that's the old one. That's the show hasn't been that for about a year now. We have the grind, the multiplayer and the unboss.
And America's been set back decades. We can, you know,
anyway, but why don't we get started with
the grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. It's been the same crew for a while.
I was not all there last week, so
that's fine. You didn't have to say that, man.
It was okay. It's all good.
Yeah. So I just I will ask. Does anybody have anything new that they've been doing? New
Dave
games?
And I could tag team one, I think.
Yeah, let's do that.
No, I think the game came out in 2018.
Okay.
Something like that, 2017. We've been playing a game called For the King.
Okay.
And was recently
Which
made...
is ironic because there is no king. You are, in fact, working for a queen.
Okay.
Am I right? Anyway, it's almost like a board game / D&D campaign.
Mm-hmm.
That you can control up to three heroes at once. Got a lot of roguelike features, where you can run the same campaign over and over and have it be different. But you can also invite people together and have each person control one character.
Okay.
Dave, I forget what yours is called.
Mine is the blacksmith.
Blacksmith. Okay. Yep. And I'm the hunter. So far it hasn't felt like they fit into like super traditional roles. Like I'm kind of like hunter archer person, but there's a good bit of rogue in there, and I'm using a melee weapon right now though, so it's not really locked into a single role.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas David, you're kind of the stronger one, but you've also lucked into being the luck person.
Because your weapon in particular determines what skills you have in combat. So that most of the time that's just going to be like, oh, I used to deal fire damage, but now I pierce armor. Like it's not really different, but it can create situations where it's like, you either do or do not have crowd control or taunt abilities or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, it can have a pretty significant effect on your stats. And like Dennis mentioned, it just so happens that I've kind of ended up with a lot of equipment that increases, my luck stat. And also then kind of related to that ability to gain money.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you're rolling deep.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
We've got a laundering scheme whenever there's a corpse to loot. We pass it over, let David do the dirty work, and then we can split up afterwards.
Nice.
But yeah, it is. I think it's probably accurate to describe it as a small numbers RPG, just in terms of, you know, you're fighting enemies with 8-11 health, at least right now, and we're early in it. Mm-hmm. And you're doing very discrete amounts of damage at a time. The way it checks for damage is every weapon has a skill that it tests, which the skill determines your percentage chance of passing the test, and then a number of times that it's tested. So, you know, it could be like 3 tests of strength or 4 tests of awareness. I think we've seen mostly 3 and 4 weapons. We've seen one test weapon, which is ridiculous, because it's, you know, it's pass fail, but it's also, you know, really, really consistent because
And we should say if all of the tests pass, that's then a critical hit.
Mm. Yeah. Exactly. And then there's, you know, there's other effects that have percentage chances within it as well. But it's kind of like a step to the side of traditional dice rolling that I kind of like. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, probably mathematically it's, you know, it all comes out in the wash to still be, you know, playable and reasonable, but it feels fresh, which I liked.
Yeah.
And then I would say it's tuned to be fairly difficult. I mentioned it's a roguelike. Which means I think you had to remind me at one point, like, I don't know if we're supposed to survive all this. So.
Right. Exactly.
So you were playing too conservatively.
Yeah, I think just agonizing over the long term. And gotcha. It's like, let's give ourselves some grace to learn the game before we get super strategic.
I did before we move on from the mechanics.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
other kind of two sort of really cool mechanics are one, you have focus points. Which are basically you can spend them to automatically succeed one of the dice rolls.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, these same dice roll rules are used for passing skill checks for things like disarming traps or in one instance, Dennis had a skill check, which was just like, some guy being like, hey, why don't you see if you can outrun my arrows that I shoot at you? If you can, I'll give you some money.
This feels like an excuse to shoot at someone.
Yeah.
But you did get money out of the deal. but
what about dignity?
Yeah. And then the other thing that's kind of interesting is the Overworld is a board game, like a straight up like hex grid board game. Mm-hmm. And when you enter combat, whether or not the other player assists you is determined by if they're within a certain number of hexes of you.
Okay.
Which is interesting. Yeah. But yeah, just wanted to throw that out from a mechanical standpoint before we went farther.
Yeah.
I mean, that does create some interesting decision making where it's like, okay, you also roll for how many hexes you can roll as in do the tests. I think that is a 5 test thing, but you know, for how many hexes you can move every turn. And it's like, oh, well, you know, I can see something that's a strength test over here that would be great for me to take. I can go get it this turn, but that means on my way there, I'm going to be out of range. If anyone springs combat on me and there are random encounters that you can't see in advance. So there's definitely risk and reward. So I the other thought that I had was just that it seems to be balanced fairly difficult. And we just finished the first like main dungeon and it felt really, really good. Like the final combat we got through by the skin of our teeth. And, you know, I had to use a bunch of our items that we'd saved up and all this stuff. So it just that at least, you know, that point in it felt like, okay, yeah, this is a game where we're on the razor's edge. Every choice matters, and playing strategically and reacting well, is really, really important every combat versus, you know, a lot of RPGs, or games, you feel like, okay, I can kind of close my eyes and click my way through, unless I'm, you know, at a huge breaking point.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, you can play it solo controlling everyone. You can divvy up between people, all 3. We just decided to roll with 2 characters, and I don't know if that's going to hamstring us later on, but I think it would feel weird if we had one that we were just kind of co-controlling or whatever.
Nice. Speaking as an outsider, this game like has a really cool look to me as well. Mm-hmm. Like it's got a nice kind of low poly aesthetic to it that that also like, you know, has just nice rich colors and good like lighting kind of effects. Like, I don't know, that counts for something.
It also has I really like the combat. When you kill an enemy, it kind of enables ragdoll mode. And so it tends to be just kind of sort of silly, particularly if you're using like an art range weapon. You know, they'll just kind of like fly away and kind of like bounce around a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not any sort of gore or anything like that. More just kind of weak, silly, like, you know, literally like a ragdoll.
Yeah. It's like this was very clearly built into the engine that you made the game in. And you're like, man, why the hell not?
Yeah, let's go for it.
But yeah, the graphics are very much like a small team made these, but they know how to make things look good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's been fun. And that's For the King.
Cool. Did you have anything else, Dennis?
Yeah, nothing new. Valorant is in open beta now. The CSGO kind of competitor from Riot. So I've been having a lot of fun with that. They added a new hero, they added a new map, but it's the same kind of very tight, very intense gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing significant there. But I can now say, if you remember, my main qualm was the way they did the closed beta. So mm-hmm. I can now say in good conscience, like, hey, look me up if you want to play in that game.
Yeah, no, you won't have to watch streams and hope that something drops. So exactly. So misguided.
And then I wound my way back to Shadow of War after some
nice.
Time. And finished the tutorial.
Okay.
Like 9 hours into the game, I didn't know I was still in the tutorial, but there's very clearly a moment of like, all right, here's the rest of the map opened up to you now. Here's a couple new systems that we were holding back until you had your legs under you. Go.
Huh.
So you've now dealt with Brugge?
Yes, and I'm just now reaching that point after I thought I'm like well into the game, which is hilarious.
Yeah, his arc gets significantly weirder and more disturbing.
That is in character for the orcs. yeah, so that is, and you know, the orcs in general are just. We've talked before about how each one is so, you know, unique, and that is something that just feels entirely different than any other game that I've played. And it's held up over time as I've continued in it. Although apparently I'm earlier in it than I thought with this whole tutorial thing. But the other thing I noticed is it is a game that is very, very much built around the idea of you're going to sandbox and kind of dick around and just make your own fun. Because when I came back, I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to really focus on the main story and knock out some progress there. And that was boring. It was way too many cutscenes. The missions were way too simplistic. It was more fun to just derp around.
Yeah.
So yeah, not a ton new to report there, but Shadow of War and Valorant. But the big new thing was For the King.
Cool.
So the advice I would give is once you get far enough in the story that you can go back to the first zone that you the very first zone you start in, that's like the city or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
From that point on, it becomes much more viable to do like just critical path, and the kind of final act is basically just like, hey, why don't you do a ton of sandboxing? So I would say once you get to that point, it might be worth just then switching over to critical path. But yeah, you're definitely right that the critical path is not the focus of the game.
So you're saying I should eat my veggies and then go to dessert with all the tools at my disposal.
Right.
Fair enough.
And like, yeah, with the thing of like I said, like things go big time off the rails after that point, and it is worth seeing.
Very cool.
Cool. Nice. David, how about you?
Sure. So I've actually got a number of things.
Okay.
So let's see here. I picked up, picked up, I of course mean, you know, played for free because of Xbox Game Pass, or for free with, you know, having bought it.
Whatever. Yeah, you unlocked it. Yeah.
Right. Or actually, I think this one actually might have been an Epic thing, but the point still stands.
somehow this game landed in your orbit.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And that is Just Cause 4. I don't know, have any of you guys messed around with any of the games in this series, or 4 in particular?
I played 2 a whole bunch, and then maybe a little bit of 3.
Yeah. So, and my understanding is this one's most similar, I think, to 3, although it pulls in some of the mechanics of 2. But basically the plot line is...
Paper thin?
Yes, the plot line is very paper thin. Like, you are a CIA agent, or in this case, like, former CIA agent, whose job is to destabilize South American countries, and so that the people will overthrow their dictator and live happily ever after, ?
Gotta tell you, I'm not on board with this right now, but, you know, video games are video games.
Yeah.
It's just weird that that's...
And it's, from what I can tell, it's been sort of a weird thing with the game of, like, the series as it goes along becoming less and less comfortable with its own premise.
Yeah. It's specific, like, I don't know, it's not good when we do it anywhere, but, like, specifically Latin America, like, we've fucked around everywhere, but, like, that's, I don't know, I shouldn't rank things. It just, that doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah, and so, like, this one seems like they're definitely trying to a little bit back up from that, like, you're not working for the government, and so... And you're theoretically kind of more, more altruistically actually trying to help people, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's still really sketchy, and, like, the plot barely makes sense.
Yeah.
Most notably, the evil government is developing weather control powers.
so that's how you'd make it okay. You turn it into, like, cartoon supervillain.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I want to jump in. I'm not, like, too disturbed with the premise of Just Cause 2. Like, the main boss is somebody surfing on a nuclear missile at one point in the game. So
yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
This is not a game that's, like, trying to have a gritty, realistic tone.
Yeah. It's not, like, good, like, really, Ghost Recon or something like that. Yeah.
I mean, really, when it comes down to it, if you have the question of, you know, like, why am I doing these things? The answer is Just Cause.
Yes.
No, it is, though, strikes me. 2 is the only one I've played before. And one thing that does strike me as a little weird is that in 2, it was much more, you were generally attacking much more theoretically military targets, or at least, like, industrial targets.
Yeah.
And the point was much more explicitly just, like, cause unrest to cause problems for the dictator so that you can, so that they have to make a move and you can then go and kill them. Whereas this one, it's presented as, like, cause unrest in order to cause more people to join the, like, rebellion against the dictator, which it's kind of weird because, like, so what am I, like, trying to demonstrate, like, this dictator is people need to come together to demand that the dictator protect them from me?
Also lines up with CIA action in the global south.
Yeah, like, it's
all right.
Yeah, so like there's a lot of stuff in this that doesn't quite make sense. One thing that I do like about it, and this kind of gets into the one thing I hate about Shadow of War, but what I like about this character is he's basically the kind of gritty, like, oh, I'm trying to, you know, turn a ragtag bunch of civilians into a, you know, rebellion, kind of that sort of thing. Except that, like, unlike virtually every other game that uses that plot line, your character just doesn't feel any need to be an asshole about it. Like, you know, he's just like, you know, someone will, you know, organize an ambush or just be like, yeah, good job with the ambush. You really hit, you really nailed it that time.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's like, huh, it's actually much more fun to play a game where your character's not an asshole to everyone.
Imagined.
So I guess the other thing about this series, which I feel like probably a lot of people know already, but just for sake of argument, is kind of your character's thing is that he has a sort of Bionic Commando style grappling hook, reusable grappling hook, a reusable parachute, and this time around wingsuit. So you can do a lot of things where you can basically use the grapple to like pull yourself forward, and then as you're doing it, pop your parachute to kind of do a paraglide type of thing. And you know, it can get more and more progressively crazy, you know, do that to then propel yourself into like a flying kick on an enemy, you know, those sorts of things.
Tony Hawk's Pro Skater got weird.
They have timed rockets in this one too, right?
Right. So that's the other thing is your grapples, you can also connect them to things. And so like, say, connect a explosive barrel on one end and a enemy helicopter at another. So then when you release the mouse button, the explosive barrel will be like retracted at high speed and basically get thrown at the helicopter. And then one of the fun things here is this time around you have a series of mods for your grapple. So you can either get a sort of Fulton device style balloon or rocket boosters.
Okay.
And one of the things I really love is that all of these can be very fine-tuned to behave exactly the way you want them to. So you can choose, like, on the balloon, you can choose, is the balloon just regular balloon or is it explosive? is it, you know, is it immune to firearm damage or will it be destroyed by it? How high will it float? How fast will it float? That sort of thing. Similarly with rocket boosters, you know, you can, you know, how powerful are they? How long do they fire for? All this stuff. And so you can very specifically tailor these devices to just do crazy stupid stunts.
Someone played a lot of Incredible Machine growing up.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you doing this on the fly?
Yes, for the most part. So the customization, you basically have three kind of preset setups for your grapple that you can switch between. So you actually configure them beforehand and then can just switch between these. But then the applying them is, you know, actually using them is all on the fly. And I would say it's kind of a combination of pretty forgiving auto aim with a good deal of kind of intelligence, kind of intuiting what you're trying to do. And then just a lot of just silliness.
Okay.
So, you know, there's a significant degree to which a lot of combat is you just like ziplining all over the place and like, you know, popping your parachute and just, you know, remaining a difficult target to hit.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, overall, just, you know, it's a game entirely built around just being silly and over the top and nonsensical. I think eventually you get the ability to actually control the weather events. So you'll literally be able to like summon a tornado, things like that.
Awesome.
Have you played Grand Theft Auto 5?
I've played the multiplayer.
Okay. I was going to say, I would be very curious to hear your take on, you know, comparing and contrasting once you've done both.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I know you can, and for players who are really good, I've seen videos of people doing things like if you, say there's like a propane tank, if you, you know, shoot down near the end, it'll start, you know, kind of rocketing out gas. And so we'll, you know,
they'll shoot in direction,
actually fly in that direction. And so instances where like people will use that and then grapple to the propane tank as like an improvised jetpack.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is very much like any stupid thing you can think to do with any of these, you definitely can.
I remember from playing Just Cause 2, I grappled onto the side of a shack as it was blowing up, and then I was on the perspective of a door as it was spinning down like a mountainside. And it was like, it's completely awesome. It was like, wow, yeah. The camera is so cool right now.
Yeah. Another really fun thing to do is just if you're having a chase, simply grapple the car you're chasing to the ground.
Yep.
I mean, troublesome concept aside, this does still sound like a lot of fun. Yeah, I remember, Ben, years ago, you talking about doing similar stuff in Just Cause 2, and it sounded equally fun then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's honestly, like, it's a lot of fun, but that's really all I have to say from the game, because it very much is just a dumb, make-your-own-fun game.
It sounds kind of similar to Shadow of War.
Yeah. Ironically enough, the other game I've been playing some of is very similar. This time's definitely on Game Pass. Got Dead Rising 4.
Oh, shit, yeah.
They made a 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised to that, too.
So this is basically like Dead Rising, it's Christmas this time?
Like it's literally,
I don't know.
Or they're giving you a bunch of gifts in the game?
No, like, it's literally set during Christmas. Like, the plot line is in the city that the original game takes place in. They open up, basically, like, the Mall of America.
Why would they open another mall?
Well, and then on Black Friday, it gets, like, overrun by zombies.
Okay. But who could tell the difference, am I right?
Yeah, to say, but when does the zombie outbreak happen?
Right. It's got some interesting things. Like, one of the things that's kind of funny is that despite being a very dumb series, the game does have, like, continuity.
Mm-hmm.
And what my inner favorite premise is from that's been throughout all of these is that at no point is it ever seriously suggested that humanity would be at risk of being overrun by zombies.
Okay.
You know, like, it's a major humanitarian crisis, but it's like, really, guys, we've got military hardware. Like, zombies can't actually take over. That's just dumb.
Yeah.
So it's the opposite of World War Z.
Right, exactly. And so by this point, you know, actually everyone in the world is vaccinated against zombieism.
Okay.
And so there's like some weird things for like, oh, is this like a weaponized strain? You know, that sort of thing. But the thing that's probably weirdest is you're back to playing as Frank, who's the main character from the first game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of set up as the premise is that in the first game, you became a hero for both uncovering and reporting on the zombie virus, and then also like stopping it.
Yep.
But then when you try to show that the zombie virus was actually caused by the military and the government and there's a cover up, you basically get buried.
Oh, you did.
And
did they black bag him or do they just?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No. More just like the character is kind of always was a, sort of this stereotypical, like maybe an alcoholic, like,
gotcha.
Kind of reporter stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
And so by this point, he kind of his arc is, he's now kind of a, deadbeat, desperately looking for an opportunity to regain his glory days.
Gotcha.
And so it does this really weird thing where on the one hand, like the other characters are really, really disturbed by the fact that like, Frank doesn't appear to care at all about the human cost of the disaster, like views entirely as a opportunity to become famous again.
Okay.
And like, there's some implication that like maybe some of what you're seeing is like actually him suffering from PTSD and basically like, trying to, not so much actually being callous, but trying to emotionally distance himself
right.
from, the things he's experienced, that sort of thing. But at the same time, this is the game where, like, you get bonus points for, sticking servbot heads on zombies. Like,
yeah.
So there, it's not even like, was it ludonarrative dissonance?
Mm-hmm.
It's just straight up cognitive dissonance with its own story.
It's trying to have it always. Yeah.
Yeah. So on the plus side, though, it's a lot of fun to, just, get in a exoskeleton suit, rip up a parking meter and use it to like wade into a group of zombies and start knocking them around.
I see that in this one you can take selfies with the zombies.
Ooh.
Yes, you can in fact do that. Also, I have to say, and it's funny, so the mechanic, the first game had the mechanic of being able to take photographs because, you're theoretically a photojournalist, and that's been absent from the subsequent games until this one. And so I went back and looked and, was looking for, information on... there's different categories of pictures. So there's like drama, horror,
gore. That's been the case. Yeah.
Right. What I didn't know, which is kind of like, wow, this really hasn't aged well, is in the original game, one of the picture categories was erotica.
Yeah.
Which you got from like taking cleavage shots of the female NPCs and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, oh, wow, that was very much made in a different time.
Yeah. Did they stop that?
Yeah, no, that's not here. Sorry, I wasn't bringing it up because
cool.
of that. It was more just like I didn't know that was a thing until I happened to read about it in looking at this.
So I've got two questions just about what they did or didn't keep. So is there still stuff that's time based? Like, are you on a, like a limit? Do people die at certain times if you don't get to them? Or is it kind of more free flowing?
So it is more free flowing. And I think overall, granted, I haven't played a ton of it, but I think overall it's actually kind of worse for that.
Mm-hmm.
For a couple of things. One, it seems like most of the people you're saving are just kind of generic people, as opposed to previously each of them had very explicit and usually very silly personalities that
they also had like different like gameplay stuff
right,
purposes
exactly.
too. Yeah.
So for example, in Dead Rising 2, you're basically in Las Vegas and there's kind of a showgirl that is in a mermaid costume, so she can't actually walk. You have to carry her to safety.
Okay.
You know, just things like that. I feel like the pacing doesn't quite work anymore, because this game does a very good job of, you know, rendering a ton of zombies and like actually having you know, kind of the horde mechanics, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
However, the zombies themselves are usually not particularly dangerous. And so I feel like it needs that timing in order to provide enough pressure for all the pieces to click into place.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So overall, I'm kind of thinking it's probably not as good of a game as some of the other older ones in the series.
No.
But, you know, I have to see. And again, it's kind of a game that's mostly about just having stupid fun.
Yeah. My other question would be, do they still have like the boss fights against, I mean, like in the original, which is the only one that I played, they were called, you know, you're fighting psychopaths, which also hasn't aged very well. But it's like, do they continue having that where you're fighting like over the top, you know, just kind of people who are broken about the situation? Or are you like,
yes.
Okay. No.
Does it also have the difficulty whiplash?
where the game changes abruptly when you get to them? Yeah,
a little bit. Not nearly as bad in terms of the difficulty whiplash, but a little bit. I believe they're now maniacs, which
okay,
I guess is sort of better.
Maybe a lateral move, different connotation. Yeah,
yeah. The one I've the only ones I've come across so far is one of the things in the mall is like a medieval times restaurant. So it's basically you're fighting like LARPers.
Cool.
Yes.
Which is also good just because like that then means you very quickly get access to like fighting zombies with any medieval era weapon you want.
Of course. Yeah.
Makes sense.
So, yeah.
Makes
so,
sense.
Yeah, that's all I've seen so far. Yeah, I just remember that last boss fight from Dead Rising 2. Like, horrible from a mechanics standpoint. Amazing from just visceral in impact on the end.
Mm.
But, yeah.
So,
and makes me terrified about the Fulton device.
The thing that so my joints hurt right now, like my knees and you mm-hmm. know, they're just hip, and the reason is because I just looked, Dead Rising came out 14 years ago.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Hey, keep that shit to yourself.
Hey
man.
Everybody. I had just graduated high school.
Oh man.
Oh geez.
I remember playing that in one of y'all's dorm rooms, and it might have been long enough ago that it was all of y'all's dorm room.
Yeah, I think it very well may have been all of ours.
It's possible, yeah.
Crazy.
Very cool. By which I mean, time worked. There's no sense being surprised that time works. So
still working.
Yeah, it's slipping. I'm gonna move off of you, David. Was there anything else that you had nope. about Dead Rising 4? Just Cause 4, Dead Rising 4. Any other surprise fourth entries? Diablo 4,
Left 4 Dead 4.
Ooh, that'd be weird.
Ooh, hey, Half-Life still wouldn't have made a 3 in the series.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
All right, so I am going to have perpetually boring weeks until June 19th when The Last of Us 2 comes out.
Okay.
But I've continued to play Deep Rock Galactic. I don't know if I've talked about this or not. They released like a 1.0, the game's quote-unquote release now.
Cool.
Basically, not too much has changed. One of the only mechanics is that there's a customizable pickaxe options now. So you, like, on, I don't know if it's every map or not, but on a lot of maps, there's these devices that'll make a sound if you're near it. Mm-hmm. And then if you find it, then it'll add a marker on your map. And if you can get to that point, then you, like, upgrade your pickaxe somehow. And it's basically just different parts that you can interchange. So mm-hmm. it's all, like, cosmetic stuff. Yeah, I don't know. I played that with some friends. I upgraded the one class I hadn't, or I guess the two classes I hadn't played as much with the engineer and the gunner. I don't know. That's just a good time sink game. It continues mm-hmm. to be fun.
Oh, like I said, just sit around and bullshit with friends while you do pretty much computer game tasks.
Yeah. Yep. I've continued playing Rocket League. I've continued playing Slay the Spire. Yeah, so all those are normal. The one new thing I've played is I've started playing Pit Cross.
Oh, damn.
So because I am hard up for games right now, in my opinion.
Careful.
it's not that kind of Pit Cross. I was inspired by you, Cole. It was okay. Let me just try a puzzle game. I'm not even going to say what kind of Picross game it is, because it's just like a dumb app that I downloaded. Yeah, it's free, but also like has plenty of ads and is annoying in that sense. And I don't like any of that aspect.
Right.
But this seems to be like a good like Sudoku replacement type game, mm-hmm. Where it's like, yeah, if you got like 5 or 10 minutes to burn and you just want to do some puzzle thinking, it's pretty fun. I feel like I already have a good like strategy for the rules or whatever, where it's like you kind of look at how many like degrees of freedom you have, and you mm-hmm. can kind of place like certain subsets of the numbers in places, and then like marking the X's around places where you know it's not going to be. And, mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. You know,
it's like
everything but the most difficult Picross is going to be it's less of a puzzle and more of just a task of just like mm-hmm. going through the list of dependencies that you have. Mm-hmm. There are difficult Picrosses where like you end up having to make like intuitive leaps. But mm-hmm. moreover, it's kind of for the pleasure of the ritual, kind of like Sudoku. Yeah.
Yeah. With the added bonus that you get a nice picture at the end.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, if you find yourself wanting a version of that, that doesn't have ads, like Picross S on the Switch is really good. And that's like $6.
Okay.
Yeah, those are my Picross games of choice.
I was going to steer the conversation in that direction and ask which ones you recommended. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Didn't you play a Mario Picross at some point in time?
I did a Pokemon Picross game on the 3DS.
Okay. All right.
Which is funny because I would totally believe that Picross is a Pokemon.
Yeah.
Well, I've got to ask, is there a Pikmin Picross?
I'm not aware of it. Maybe there is a Picross puzzle where a Pikmin is the answer to it. But
I was thinking you teach Pikmin how to solve Picrosses, and that's the game.
Maybe
like the meta puzzle solving.
Yeah. The Picross S, there are three of them out right now. Those are very good collections of Picross puzzles.
I'll keep that in mind.
And I don't want to pass up the brilliant idea you had of a game where you are training an AI to solve puzzles for you.
Yeah.
Something there.
It's called programming.
Yeah.
It's like the more I've watched like John Blow do game development streams and stuff mm-hmm. like that, it's like if you want to make a game, like you have to like you completely master every aspect of the game, and you make a tool that can make the game you want to make. Mm-hmm. And so it's like this weird like level of abstraction above like what you're actually working on.
Since we're talking about logic puzzles and things like that, I want to ask, because all of you would probably have a certain weakness to this. Did you guys a couple of weeks back see the video of the miracle Sudoku that was put out?
Oh, no. What's that?
Go.
I saw the headline, but I didn't get a chance to look
at it. It's genuinely exhilarating to watch. I don't want to over summarize it. But like, it's a YouTube channel. It's like a, you know, a pair of world cross Sudoku or world class, Sudoku players. They won like medals and stuff like that. Like they kind of trade puzzles back and forth. It's a 26 minute video of somebody solving a seemingly impossible Sudoku puzzle that doesn't just have like a series of like really kind of opaque rules around it, like the there are rules for like what can be the letters, the numbers rather, that can be adjacent to a square, like numbers that are within a chess move, like a knight chess move, mm-hmm. of a particular square. So it's a bunch of stuff, wow. like that. But like, moreover, there are only two numbers on the grid at the start. And he says, okay, this is obviously a joke. But then like he says, oh, I could see what would go here. And it's a 26 minute process of somebody who not only is really, really good at solving these things, but is also really good at explaining his reasoning for it.
That's what I was going to ask about. Yeah. Yes. So it's not him just silently puzzling to himself.
No, he's walking through kind of like the little, heuristics that he's doing, kind of on the fly.
Those kind of videos allow you to do just the most, fun kind of self-deception where they'll point it out and you go, oh yeah, I would have seen that.
Yeah, but just like,
you walk out feeling like a genius.
Yeah, exactly, because like, I don't know, I felt like I understood Sudoku a little bit better, and I'm not generally, yeah. somebody who really enjoys Sudoku, but look it up. It's called the miracle Sudoku. I felt like cheering at the end of it.
Well, how long does it take to get to the tipping point where it's like, you know, once you get a certain critical mass filled in, the rest becomes completely obvious?
I forget what it is. It's like, I kind of forgot that time existed while I was watching it. I was gonna say,
if I'm quiet for the rest of the podcast, it's because I'm going to look at this puzzle now.
it's really good. The same goes for the listeners. Like, this was a big thing on social media a while back, but it's a big thumbs up from me. But yeah, so you're enjoying Picross, Ben?
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, it's a fun little, I call it a brain scratcher.
Yeah.
So for me, was all you had then?
Yes. Okay. Nothing is all I have until June 19th.
Right. Oh, that's pretty soon. It's a week or two. Yeah.
Oh, I did look up, you can order Last of Us Part 2 on like PlayStation, so you can get it like directly, so you don't have to like worry about going somewhere if you need to.
Gotcha.
And I think it's going to be released for like download on the night of the 18th, I believe.
Okay.
Well, or it's during a different time.
It's going to be a huge download.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clear space now.
Make
a side note. When is Cyberpunk? Isn't that fairly
October?
Soon?
I think September, October,
September. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll do mine. So this past weekend I streamed something pretty cool. It is called the Dread X Collection. It was put out toward the end of May. It is a collection of very small horror games made by indie developers. And so Dread X is the name of like a small, like basically publishing label that a lot of people are, publishes a lot of smaller indie games. But kind of the remit of this is they went to existing indie horror game developers and said like, hey, create the PT for the horror project that you would like to make. And we'll put it together into a collection and put this out. So it's 10 very small games, uneven quality, uneven kind of amount of complexity and even say like doneness. There are a good number of creators reflected in here who are also reflected in a similar collection put out several months ago, the Haunted PS1 demo disc. I streamed that. There are a few people who pop up in both places, but this is very much in that kind of zone. This is a product like you buy the collection on Steam for like $7. I would say like, yeah, it's worth it. Like, I don't know, I played pretty much all of it. There was only one game, or there were two of them that I kind of bounced out of because I just, it was too much for me. Not scary wise, but just I couldn't see how to get forward, or I was getting frustrated. But like, yeah,
too unpolished.
Some stuff like that. But like, it was like 5 hours worth of stuff. And there are a handful of things in here that are extremely good. Specifically one that I really, really enjoyed, which is called The Pony Factory.
Oh,
This is a shooter. It's made by the guy who made Dusk, kind of that, Quake.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like the old school throwback, like, you know, it's kind of a Quake game, super fast, low poly, horror themed kind of thing. It's that guy, David Szymanski, I believe is his name. It's a real simple shooter where you really only have one weapon. You've got like a bolt gun. It takes place in a factory where somebody used devil power to start reshaping people into horse and pony monsters. The thing about it that will stick out at first is that the aesthetic, like, it is a very high contrast black and white. And it is very difficult from a resource management perspective, where like you really need to be scrounging for ammo and for health. Additionally, like the enemies are quite aggressive and quite loud, and they will sneak up on you. but it is just like,
I reconcile that they're loud.
So so like, because it is high contrast black and white, and because, you know, in general there's a lot of darkness, like they will be in the same room with you, like, you know, maybe within sight. And then when you see them, or when they decide to attack, then they get real loud in an intimidating way and either like run at you or start casting spells at you. And if you go watch the stream, I had to laugh at myself because there were so many times where I was just going, it was like, I know there's going to be a horse monster here, but then they go, brrr, and they go, fuck, 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 fuck. And they just unload a whole clip into it. It's just real startling, but it's all just like, like a really tightly designed, simple little shooter. Man, I just did this creator, David Szymanski. I'm way into everything he makes. It's good stuff.
Talk about where this like Tiger Electronics looking game fits in.
Yeah. So that is a game, called, what is it? Summer Night. Yeah. It's made by a developer by somebody named Airdorf. They actually popped by in the chat when I streamed this, both the producer for the package and like Airdorf, the creator here. I guess they had an alert for when people were streaming it. Like, they popped in to ask, like, hey, how'd you enjoy this? but Summer Night, it's like a fictional haunted Tiger Electronics LCD game that is very simple, but the rules start changing on you as it goes. And there's like little creepypasta stuff that happens, like, the moon starts changing in the background, and like what appears to be a ghost of a person comes at you. And there's like a little, there's a little twist partway through where the mechanics change. It's real good. Yeah. The sound design is a real thing too, because you're real focused in trying not to make, mistakes and lose health and stuff like that. You are playing as somebody who's sitting in a room in a house where there are horrible things happening. Just real like atmospheric horror sounds that are kind of happening to you right out of view.
Nice.
It's real cool. Yeah. It's a, it is a good concept. The fake haunted Tiger Electronics.
Is there so I'm seeing a screenshot of a game that looks like it's just, like an old school RPG where like, you know, you're looking through like a window and then the rest of the screen is kind of interface.
Yeah. You are talking about Hand of Doom, which is fun. It's a little bit more fiddly than some of the other games in the collection. But the hook of it is kind of neat. So you're playing as this mage who wakes up in a tomb, and you're in this kind of like collection of, you know, spooky spaces full of wizards. And what you are doing is going around and learning, incantations for particular spells. And you're clicking on the individual syllables in order to cast them.
Huh?
Yeah. There's some good, like, jump scares. There's some good, like, you reach the end of a hallway, you grab something and you turn around and something was following you. When you weren't aware of it and it runs away. That one's not necessarily combat based, you know, it's more like, like a puzzle kind of thing. But it's nice and charming, and it does have that, like, people compared it to like, Elder Scrolls Arena or Daggerfall.
Nice.
when it came up. I don't want to talk about all of these, but if you see one that is, that is especially, is raising your curiosity, to let me know. The other one that I enjoyed, it is called, Mr. Bucket Told Me To.
Okay.
This takes place on a deserted island. You're playing as somebody who's, who has been trapped there for a very long time. It is a survival game. And all of your tools are things that you have drawn like smiley faces on and you've named it. So it's like Mr. Spear, you know, is the spear. There's Mr. Bowl is the bowl that you grab to like drink water with. There's Mr. Towel, which, you wipe your butt with. And you have meters that you have to, take care of, which are, you know, your hunger, your thirst, whether or not you need to poop and how filthy you are. And like the trick of it is that every night an old tool of yours named Mr. Bucket, you know, he appears to you as a ghost and you have to sacrifice one of your friends, quote unquote, in order to, proceed. And without that tool, all that you have are more inefficient ways to satisfy your, you know, your meter needs. And then it goes on. Like, apparently there is a way to win it. What sticks out about it is that the dialogue and writing is really good. And that is actually, that stands to reason, because one of the writers for Hypnospace Outlaw wrote it. So, and that is a game that has a very, very good writing. Yeah. But yes, Mr. Bucket told me to. I had a lot of fun with that one.
A lot packed into this pack.
Yeah, it, like, the, you know, not all of them are incredibly substantial, but there's like enough there that it's like, ah, shit. Like, even the Pony Factory is enough.
Yeah. Well, especially for a genre of game that it's like thrives on really cool ideas that, you know, don't need to be played out for incredible amounts of time. Like, it seems like a great format for the genre.
Yeah, no, and like, I don't know, just the, like the genre of weird little horror experiments, on itch that are released. Like, that is a really fertile space that I desperately need to pay more attention to.
Is there, there's so gotta much cool be equivalents to that in film, right? Like, what, are there horror compilations, in a similar vein in film?
Short films.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like, you can get, something that we've covered on, Unfilmable, the show that Gary and I do about Lovecraft film adaptations. There are DVD compilations of shorts that were aired at the H.P. Lovecraft film festival.
Nice.
Yeah, and those are really good collections of things. Again, of varying levels of completion and varying levels of you know, production value, but they're all generally pretty interesting.
Very cool.
Yeah. The only other one that I want to give a little bit of a nod to is Shatter. This is a game that is done by a developer called Lovely Hell Place. This is, if you look at it, it is one of the ones that looks explicitly like it is a PlayStation 1 game. This is a developer who did a game in the haunted PS1 demo disc called, I think, Dread Devotion or something like that. That was a little bit like a Kingsfield kind of game. I really want to pay more attention to what they are doing, because Shatter is, you know, mostly like an explore and do adventure game kind of thing. But the concept of it is so good that you are in like the dystopian ruins of Britain. And everything, basically everybody is hooked up for augmented reality, and the entire kind of like society is run by these AI gods that exist only in AR that take the form of gigantic bugs. Yeah.
And are pink.
Yes. Yes. Are very pink. Has a very, very good and cool aesthetic. Like, it's cool. I really dig it. It's yeah. DreadX collection is quite neat. Nice. Any other questions about that?
Sounds like no.
Okay.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, I had board games on the brain, so I wanted to know what video game would you most want to see as a board game equivalent and vice versa. And I realized as I posted, like, this is becoming a harder game to answer, at least in the theoretical, because so many games are getting this treatment both ways now. So
yeah.
We got some good answers, though.
The image that you posted is of a really over-the-top board game adaptation of Horizon Zero Dawn, mm-hmm. which, I mean, it probably costs a couple $100, but those minis look amazing to me.
So, yeah, I mean, owning miniatures of robot dinosaurs will never not be worth it.
It's kind of the reason that I got the Dark Souls board game.
Yeah. See, I feel like I would not want a Horizon Zero Dawn game that is actually about Horizon Zero Dawn. I would want the game that is like, you know, her tribe doing like robot dino hunting.
I think you've got your wish. From the limited amount I've looked at this game, it is that.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds amazing.
Like you're hunters competing together to take down these giant monsters, but you're also trying to like be the ones that can claim credit. So there's a bit of co-opetition going on.
Yeah.
Nice.
Cool. So I will get us started here with Casey, who says, I would like to see an Into the Breach PvP board game where you get to play mechs versus bugs. Each player gets a pilot and the GM runs the bugs. Oh, that's cool. Alternatively, I'd like to see Ticket to Ride turned into a Civilization style game. Although the video game adaptation is pretty faithful and very fun as is, the idea of racing to complete profitable tracks, fighting train robber bandits, developing better trains, different types of cars would be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're going back, going both ways on this one.
I feel like there's got to be a kaiju focused RPG system that would be very easy to adapt to Into the Breach.
Yeah. What is?
It sounds similar to like Robo Rally, where you got to plan all your moves and then they all execute, yeah. and then mm-hmm. bad things could possibly happen.
Yeah. So the wrinkle that Casey mentions, where each of the mechs is a different player and the GM runs the bugs, adds a different kind of element to it, because like everybody has to agree on the course of action before you commit to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would play the shit out of that. Also, it'd be a very simple board that you could just like make with tiles.
Yeah. 10 by 10.
Yeah. Let's see here. David, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, my first thought was Metal Gear Solid, but turns out that already exists. I love games with a hidden bad guy mechanic. Think Tubal and Terrorist Town?
Maybe Trouble?
Probably Trouble.
Oh, my bad. So, I love games with a hidden bad guy mechanic. Think Trouble and Terrorist Town. But I also realized a lot of those exist, the Resistance being my favorite example.
Mm-hmm.
But as for board games getting turned into video games, the first that comes to mind is Betrayal at House on the Hill. It could be a first or third person team exploration game, and then just like the board game, an event happens turning one of the players evil and powerful. Then it can be an almost survival horror race to escape / kill the monster. Yeah, I love that type of mechanic in games anyway, so it could be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Was it Resident Evil or the Resident Evil game that has this kind of one player is the monster thing going for it, right?
There's the new one
done, like
evolved a long time ago and stuff. I love the idea of everyone starts out on the same team and like you have to kind of set up the arena, and so you're doing it all I'm probably gonna want to kill the monster, but in case I'm going to be the monster, I'll just leave this one door open. Like I will know it's still open. But...
It's almost like Payday or Kane and Lynch, yeah. where there's the betrayal built into it.
Yeah, Kane and Lynch has the betrayal.
A great game for, or a great, I guess, setting or whatever for doing that mechanic. I know there was a old used map setting games in StarCraft for this would be The Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
Hey, David, can you get a little bit closer to your microphone for me?
Sorry.
Cool. Yes. You just drifted away a little bit. Ben, what does Greg say?
Greg says, I just checked to confirm that this has not already been made by a major company. Oregon Trail would be great as a board game. They have a card game of this,
by the way. I was going to say, you didn't check well enough. It's in my cabinet.
It seems a board game called This was made in 1981. But that predates the classic edutainment game.
Can you give me a brief rundown Dennis, of how or Ben, how the card game works?
On yeah, it's a bad it's game.
They were selling nostalgia.
It is not play tested well. It is the rules are vague. Like it's even to the point where it's hard to start your first game because the instructions are so vague that it's unclear like what resources you need to start. The one thing that it has going for it is simple enough for kids to play. And so like it's got matching and then single die rolling. And that's about all there is to it.
What I found that is also simple enough for kids to play is Oregon Trail.
Yep.
I mean, for different values of kid. I don't know if kids your kids age, Dennis, would go with it, but I don't know.
I can't remember if it was Milo or Luke. I think it was Luke wound up refusing to keep on playing because he didn't like that his character could die.
God. Oh no.
Hard knock life, buddy.
So don't introduce him to roguelikes.
Yeah, so right. you got dysentery in.
Yeah. Maybe also don't introduce him to Nietzsche.
Yeah.
Oh geez. Dennis, what does Dan say?
He says, I would like to see a Monopoly style Outer Worlds game. The board always starts as owned by the Halcyon?
Mm-hmm.
By Halcyon, and then with spins and chance cards, you can earn respect, not money, from the citizenship to take over areas of the board. Groundbreaker, Edgewater, Tartarus, etc. Once you've owned enough, you can take over Byzantium. There could be some roleplay elements where you gain allegiance or distrust points. The winner is the person with the least money and the most respect from the world. P.S. You get extra points for making great alternatives to common phrases.
Yeah. I like the idea of adopting, Outer Worlds and Monopoly seem like a pretty good fit, at least thematically.
Yeah. But I enjoy playing the Outer Worlds.
Right. Also, Monopoly was not designed to be a fun game to play. Designed by a woman called the Landlord's Game. I know everybody knows that, but I feel like...
There's someone that doesn't, and now they do.
Yeah, now they do. Yeah. Lindsay writes, as an older game, Kingdoms of Amalur is a favorite of mine that got pushed to the wayside. I am sure that there have been D&D campaigns built around it, but as far as I know, it has never been a board game. It would work as a standalone board game, and the story is there. R.A. Salvatore wrote the story for it, and there are many ways that your game can pan out. Thankfully, there are rumors of the game getting remastered. I am hopeful for that. Look who paid attention this week's boys. I guess Lindsay last time gave us didn't follow the prompt, but we gamely included their response anyway. I think it is. I think that Kings of Amalur is getting a remake, and I would love to know if there is a way to buy it without supporting Kurt Schilling, noted libertarian monster.
I remember getting it through Gamefly way back in college, and the only thing I remember beyond that is that I played a character with a giant two-handed hammer.
Right.
Full stop. And weaving? Are there weavers in the game?
I've got no idea.
I know there's chakrams, and if you don't choose chakrams as your weapon, you are wrong.
Oh, I'm wrong. I'm going to be wrong over here with my hammer.
Kingdoms of Amalur Re-Reckoning has been announced.
Reckoning? So. What the hell?
That's a little bit of a that that's a thing that is happening, like the Red Faction Guerrilla.
Ever since the Matrix Reloaded, it's gone downhill. I will not stand for it anymore.
What did they call the Red Faction Guerrilla? Do they literally call that space asshole? No, it's a they had a they one of their trailers used the space asshole song from Idle Thumbs. The Red Faction Guerrilla game is called Red Faction Guerrilla Remastered.
Just imagine once they remake Metal Gear Solid Revengeance.
I mean, in that case it would go regular, like Metal Gear Solid Rising Double Vengeance.
Oh, guys, I googled most creative sequel names and I'm just getting mad. Alvin and the Chipmunks the Squeakquel.
Yeah. And the Squeakquel is the prequel to Chipwrecked.
No. Hey, okay. Too Fast, Too Furious belongs on this list. I like that.
Yeah.
I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
That's fine. 12, yeah.
Live Free or Die Hard. Shrek Forever After. I don't have that belongs
on there. I don't know enough about Kingdoms of Amalur to say one way or another. I just wanted to get that dig in at Kurt Schilling. Again, noted libertarian monster.
It's still amazing that how do you make a game that's entirely designed to be a ripoff and then actually make a good game? Like
people love that shit. People talk about it glowingly. Let's see here. Alexander writes, Overwatch as a team competitive card game could be cool. We're developing synergies between hero decks on your team is the metagame to win, sort of like a multiplayer version of Smash Up.
I like that.
Yeah. I don't know what Smash Up is. Does anybody who is literate in these know what that is?
Yeah, it's not
a bad card game where you have races. It's kind of like small world in a sense, but more of like a card playing game.
Okay.
I was going to be more favorable, but I have not played it. I just know you can be like ninjas versus zombies. Shuffle, 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 go.
Right. Mm-hmm. David, what does David say?
David says, Legend of Mana board game. All the under the hood systems about how levels worked based on distance from your home and its neighbors would make a great tile setting game. I'd like to see the Apocrypha board game and expansions turn into a survival horror game because it's got some great thematics and a lot of the board game bloat could be handled better as a video game.
I've never heard of Apocrypha.
Familiar with Apocrypha. Yeah.
Usually that's where one of you comes in and says, oh yeah, that's cool. It's XYZ.
Oh, I was going to say maybe we haven't heard about it because it's apocryphal.
Ooh, it's been hidden. Legend of Mana is a board game. It'd be fun. And Ben, what does Ruki say?
Ruki says Pac-Man would make a pretty neat asymmetrical board game. Four ghosts search the maze for a lone Pac-Man using only their limited vision, teamwork, and missing pellets to find him. Utilizing some kind of battleship-esque vision blocky thing, the Pac-Man player can see all the ghosts in stealth and stealth his way around, eating up all the pellets. And whenever he eats a power pellet, the game turns into basically Alien Isolation for a few turns while the ghosts flee the drugged-up eating machine looking to consume their souls. Part turn-based stealth, part existential horror, all Pac-Man.
You also on the back of the box.
I like.
You also also got the Vora fans in there.
Mm-hmm. It's for everybody, for mom and dad.
optional bow accessory to make it Mrs. Pac-Man. Two games in one.
Yeah, this just makes me want a turn-based Pac-Man game.
the whole production from missing dots and everything is a really cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
That could even work as like a programming style game, like you said, like Robot Rally or whatever.
Mm-hmm. It's good.
I just see like a tracker ghost, you know, like leaning down on the ground and like smelling his fingers and be like, these are cherries. He was here a short time ago.
The other ghost goes, where the hell did you get fingers?
Oh, man. So that's all the listener responses here. My answer for this will remain and always be a Frostpunk as a cooperative city building and management board game would be real fun.
So one person plays as the union, the other person as management?
Well, that's only the one expansion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You get a side with.
Yeah.
Only two of these three players are going to play.
But yeah, like having some kind of deck of inclement circumstances that come in that you have to deal with, I think would be real fun. And you could even do it like, what is it? Not Puerto Rico.
Port Royal, something like that.
No. One second here. that like that, that there is a card based city management game that San Juan, like it could be like San Juan, the card based city management game where you rotate roles in the city, making choices about how to react to the different inclement bad situations coming in.
I'm confusing that with the board game Puerto Rico.
Yeah. So San Juan is like a spinoff made by some of the same people that taught, like just, it's just a different mechanics of kind of a similar situation. Yeah. It's less complicated than Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is like crazy intricate, but San Juan is simple and fun. I like San Juan. That's mine. Let's see, David, how about you?
I think a Darkest Dungeon game. I don't know. There's a lot of different ways you could implement that I think would be fun. Mm-hmm. Fairly straight up board game. A collectible card game you could probably pull as. I would even love to see it as sort of a more focused pen and paper game.
Yeah.
So maybe I know there's some games that are sort of like pen and paper game, but with like a deck of cards serving as the DM, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. That's a thing. Yeah. Darkest Dungeon is a good fit.
There are work in progress images of a Darkest Dungeon board game.
Hmm.
Oh,
I don't know what stage it's at now. This video is from a year ago.
Right.
Huh.
Ben, how about you?
I got a good one directional answer for this. Turning Gloomhaven into a video game is something that they're doing, and that is a really good idea. Mm-hmm. Because that game takes forever to set up and tear down.
That's so much administrative.
Now they just need to do it well.
Yeah, that's the caveat for sure.
They're not done yet.
As far as like a video game into a board game, I don't think I have a really good answer. Like, yeah.
Yeah,
because for me at least, a good board game is one like where it's like really, really good economy management, and it's kind of like a worker placement like type Euro type game or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I don't like any sort of video game. It seems like you're just kind of slapping. You're just using the theme, and you're not really taking any of the mechanics. So
yeah,
I'm not sure.
So Sorry, I forgot that we asked both sides. For the other way around, I think I'd go with Warhammer 40K because that's a game I'd really like to play, but I'm probably never going to go to the trouble to like get and paint miniatures.
Would you want it to be like a digital adaptation of like specifically the exact rules of the tabletop, or would you want something in the world? Because like the Dawn of War Warhammer games are supposedly really, really good.
There's actually a number of pretty good Warhammer 40K games. I was meaning specifically, I think I would want either one that, you know, completely recreated the actual rules games, or one that was a first-person shooter but was good.
Right, right. There's what, Space Hulk, but that's not necessarily one that is beloved by most folks. Yeah.
Basically, If someone someday could make a Space Marine game in any world, you know, it can be alien Space Marines or 40K, just any Space Marines, but a good game.
Yeah. I think that's StarCraft. But
fair enough.
Yeah. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. So for board game to video game, I would love to see a loose adaptation of Forbidden Island. So it's by the same guy that did Pandemic, just meant to be a little bit more simple, but it's procedurally or randomly generated board where there's the same locations, and all the locations are super evocative, but they all fit together in different ways depending on when you play, and you're racing against time with three friends to collect all these artifacts and get to the escape pad or the helicopter pad before the island sinks.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take certain measures to shore it up. But in general, it's kind of that race against time. So I almost see like that Dead Rising time pressure being an interesting element.
Mm-hmm.
And then balancing kind of exploring familiar locations that are shuffled in different ways, trying to collect up artifacts and get out in time. has all the makings of a really fun co-op shooter that I would love to see.
That's a fun game. I think I played that with you guys one Christmas time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's super good. But yeah, just like I said, it would be a looser adaptation of it, but I think the elements are all there for a really fun game.
Yeah, I remember that being one of the most successful implementations of like classes in a board game I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I ever mentioned this on stream. They have another one where it's like Forbidden Skies or
they have Forbidden Desert, and Forbidden Skies I think is newer.
Yeah,
you build a circuit in the game to launch a rocket ship, and it's very satisfying because it actually works. It's an actual circuit.
Super cool. That actually like uses circuit diagramming rules.
Let's not go that far. Okay. There's like two pieces. There's metal like circle nodes, and then there's like these arms that connect the nodes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you have a power source and you have a rocket ship. And so if you know, in the game rules, you connect these things. And if it ever connects all the way around, then the rocket ship will launch off.
Hmm. Nice.
Very cool. And then video game to board game, I would do the now defunct Atlas Reactor, which is the, turn-based arena battler where the turn results all play out at the same time. So you pick your move, trying to guess what your opponent is going to do, and then it all plays out at once. And I like the idea of that as kind of this bluffing card game, like, slap down what you're going to do and try to act confident when you know it's something different than they would expect, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
That could be really fun.
Nice. I don't have an answer for board game to video game, so I'm just not going to. I could talk about doing like Connect 4 as a survival horror game. You didn't expect it diagonally, sis. But
you're going to wake up at 2 a.m. with the perfect answer.
Probably, and I'll post it on Twitter and I'll get 5 likes on it. It's fine. Oh, man. Good question. Thought-provoking question. Thank you, Dennis, for posting this, and thank you, everybody, for responding with some good responses here. If you would like to participate in this in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Watch for those to go up on Monday afternoons. A conversation is reopened about a new way to handle the multiplayer. People are understandably averse to using Facebook. However, we've been using Facebook for a very long time. And there are people who are really invested they're fine with it, and change would probably be a bummer for them. So this is just kind of a more broad call to listeners. I put it to the Slack channel as well a while back. But if you have ideas for platforms that are agreeable to you, reach out and let me know. Understand that. Ultimately, we need one place to post this and one place to gather responses. It also needs to be agreeable to use for Dennis and Jala, who are the two people who take the lead on this, on posting the multiplayer whenever it happens. So reach out, let us know, and we will factor that in. Ultimately, it may end up being that we stick with Facebook, but it is worth reevaluating that every once in a while.
Yes, indeed.
No. The end boss. Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about the things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. Ben, you just posted one. That seems like the important one to headline here, so I will throw it to you first.
Yeah, it's kind of follow up to last week's story. Last week we talked about how the PS5, they're going to demo some games or show some games instead of doing E3. That got delayed last week. It got rescheduled this week to June 11th. Mm-hmm. And again, on a selfish note, perhaps Rocksteady will release a game announcement at this. It's only an hour long, though, so it's kind of short. So we'll see.
Perhaps we will have Elden Ring release dates, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
What is Elden Ring?
That's the new game by FromSoft.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So as people are listening to this on the public feed, this is in the past. Go and see our social media presence if there's anything that is a big fuck yeah I guess I'll throw it. I mean, so Ben, you are most excited about a Rocksteady game. I am most excited about details for Elden Ring. David, is there anything that you are super, super looking forward to seeing in relation to this?
Not really. Sorry.
Cool. That is a valid answer. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. PSVR 5. Come on.
Oh man. Yeah, so I will do mine here. This is especially exciting. One of my favorite games of 2019 was the troubled horror game called Devotion. This is a game by a Taiwanese developer, the people who made Detention as well. This is the one that got censored. It got pulled off of marketplaces. What's up?
I was just recalling it.
I didn't hear what you said, David.
I said it got fascisted.
Yeah, it got authoritarian. This is the one that that had kind of a minor art asset included in it that likened the Chinese premier Xi Jinping to Winnie the Pooh, which is a sensitive subject for that particular world leader. And so it was pulled down from different markets and things like that. What I am excited about, though, is that at least in foreign markets so far, this developer is going to be releasing a physical copy, specifically in Taiwan. It is unclear right now if it is going to get an English release. But again, this is one of my favorite games of 2019. It is a really, really good horror game. It's a nice kind of like one sitting experience. And I want people to be able to play this. And I want this developer to get money because, you know, even if they, you know, I don't know. It seems to me that if you hurt a dictator's ego, you know, that's probably not enough to have your livelihood taken away, and that's not enough to hide this game away. It is a fun and point, or not a fun, it is a very poignant story that is told about family, boy, some good spooks, some good spook 'em ups in there.
It's got some rough experiences in the latter half.
Yeah, no, made me gag.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
I love it. Devotion is so good. So hopefully this means that the game will have legs beyond this this limited physical release. Good on them.
It won't have other parts of its body.
not after hour two or so. let's see, Dennis, what's going on with XCOM?
Yeah, XCOM is coming to a new platform. Yay!
Yeah.
And that platform is the Switch. Yay! Take it with you, which is awesome. And, you know, it's the Switch, so you got to make some concessions. So the graphics of the game are kind of blurred down a little bit and a little more clunky.
XCOM, but at least such intense graphics.
I know. They are. But at least the game runs super smoothly. I'm sorry. I'm getting in that even though it's dumbed down, it still chugs like a mother. So,
ooh,
bad day. So it's good. It's good that it's come to the Switch, but it is apparently not doing so hot. And I, you know, this is a world where by the time this comes out, that could be patched and all better. I hope so.
Yeah.
Because it is an amazing game, and as many people as are interested should be able to experience it. But yeah, unfortunately, the first pass response is that it's better to find another platform if you can.
Yeah. Play it on. In contrast, the graphical presentation or the animation is not the thing you are here for. It is the incredibly demanding tactics, and that could be done in a slideshow. So fuck it. If I can play this in portable, that seems like a pretty damn good way to play XCOM.
Yeah, I mean the first XCOM game is on mobile, for Christ's sake, or you know it's on Vita.
Yeah, it's a stripped down version, but yeah,
and you know they make it work, and so knowing that team or at least the people that team partners with have experience doing good ports. It's sad to hear that they're having trouble on the Switch.
Yeah,
but again, we're in a world where things can always be further ironed out. So fingers crossed. Yeah.
This is part of like a bigger 2K publish push to get like a bunch of stuff. Like this is the same like basically 3-week period in which they are putting out a BioShock collection and a and a Borderlands collection on the Switch as well. So you can play the best BioShock game, BioShock 2, on your Switch now, which is fun.
Wait, what?
I said that knowing it was going to provoke you, Ben. Don't worry. Oh man. Let's see here, and David, how about you?
I honestly have nothing. I tapped all my resources. I got nothing.
That's fine. That's fine. You don't have to sound so ashamed, buddy.
Off the show.
Yeah, you're fine.
I just feel bad because, like, I actually looked through all the places I normally look, and just nothing interesting happened this week in the world of video games.
I believe you tried, man. Don't worry. You don't have to convince me. how do y'all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level. Rather than do a self-serving plug kind of section, I want to point everybody where I probably should have done my end boss for. So if you're looking to support good causes, you can go to itch.io. Right now, as you are listening to this, at the top, there is going to be a bundle for racial justice and equality. This is a bundle of games that you can buy. The funds of it are going to be split 50-50 between the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund and the Community Bail Fund. It's a minimum $10 per, or minimum $5 purchase rather. Of course, we recommend you give what you can, understanding, you know, everything that's going on. But when you do that, you get 745 items.
It is crazy.
It is the most immediate purchase I have ever seen. I saw the link to it the first night that it was posted, and I was like, okay, let me see what's in here. Scroll, 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 scroll. Guys, I'm not hitting the bottom of this.
Minute.
You've got Night in the Woods, Tale? Mortician's Tale, Sagebrush, A Short Hike. Yeah, it's a bunch of really cool stuff, and you support a great cause. So, you know, you can give directly to, you know, different causes. I just wanted to highlight this one because it is one that you get a tremendous amount back from as well. Get it soon. There's more stuff actually that is going to be added to this as time goes on. It is an amazing show of solidarity and support by all of these developers who are on Itch. So,
and this is all just direct download stuff, but I think that's understandable given the format and the amount they're giving away. So
yeah. This is not through like a launcher, like Epic or Steam, but shit. I don't know. Just means you can just download that and put it on an external hard drive somewhere and it would still work. It's not DRM or anything. So cool. So I wanted to highlight that as a thing you could do. Otherwise though, we'll be back next week. You know what to do when a new episode comes out. One assumes. I've been Cole Ross. You can follow my tweets on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Twitter at Deck of Wonders with underscores between each word.
I have been David Moneysmith. You can find me at Moneysmith777 on Twitter.
Hmm.
And I've been
tweet, but you can find me.
I've been Ben Merkel at MerkelB on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles.
Side note, I think the thing I'm most excited about on this is the Highland Paranormal Society Cartography Kit, which is a collection of hex tiles for like pen and paper games.
Mm. Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff. There's like assets and stuff in here for different things. Cat lateral damage. There's so much here. the space between. Yeah, I need to get away from this.
I feel like be careful with cat lateral damage. Greta might get some ideas.
Yeah, I'll lock her out of the room before I get her here. She's not a destructive cat. She's a perfect sweetheart. So,
Have you seen the videos of people's cats reacting to Monster Hunter World?
No.
It's actually sometimes them being freaked out by the palicos, but mm-hmm. more often them just like stalking the like ambient animals.
Yeah. Greta will do that sometimes. If there's a, like a particle effect, she'll get up and start pawing at the screen. But
nice.
Anyway, we have a purpose here. We have titles to pick. I've got three I'll put out here. The bird is the one who tweets.
I had that rendered just as bird is the one who tweets.
Okay. I have four different values of kid. and I have where the hell did you get fingers? Okay. Who else has some?
I have three, but they're completely different.
Okay.
Nice.
So I have for free, having bought it. you know, I guess after you buy something, you get it for free every time you use it.
Yeah. So,
I mean, for now, they're trying to change that.
Oh, yeah, I am.
I have improvised jetpack. and then I have Left 4 Dead 4.
Okay. David, how about you?
So I had Bird is the one who tweets.
Okay.
It's the only one I had.
All right. Ben.
All right. I had three, and I think they're all different as well. A lot of these. So sandboxing was one. I just like the term sandboxing because it can be two different things.
No, not just as a software development thing, but just like fighting in the sand.
Could be a verb or a noun.
Yeah.
You don't have to be fighting. You just be in a sandbox. You can be sandboxing.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I also had re-reckoning.
Okay.
And then my favorite one was, I'll be wrong over here with my hammer.
What was that from?
Dennis said it when David said there's a correct weapon to play with a one game.
Gotcha.
And Hammerlock.
The one that got the most laughs that I heard is, where the hell did you get fingers?
I'm proud of that one.
Yeah.
Get behind that.
is that good?
Yeah.
I'm going to make an impassioned plea for I'll be wrong over here with my hammer. Okay. I really like that one.
That is also
That is also really good. You make an impassioned plea. Okay, if I'm over here with where the hell did I get fingers, and you're over there with I'll be wrong over here with my hammer, how do Dennis and David break?
I'm going to recuse myself because they both my quotes, I think. So,
okay, David, it's up to you.
I'm going to go with for free, having bought it.
No! you can't force us into a tie.
Oh, but I did.
Okay.
Oh man, I don't even remember which Pirates of the Caribbean that was.
Okay, so do I have to put that up as a poll?
Sure.
Okay, I'll put it up as
a
poll.
We haven't done that a while.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so the three for the poll are, where the hell did you get fingers, for free, having bought it, and I'll be wrong over here with my hammer. Is that correct?
Correct.
David, this is your fault.
There's
you.
Our fourth title.
Yeah, you can have that as a fourth option.
We always need a high index of David blaming titles.
That feels mean. I don't want to single you out, David.
Yeah, you know, whatever works.
I just want you to know I've cursed you with my heart. Cool, guys.
I'm still scrolling on the itch game list.
It's ridiculous.
It's so much. Yeah, no, like you can get a Glitterman Grove, which is Frog Fractions 2 on there. That's how I found out about it. Was Jim posted about it?
Oh,
yeah,
yeah. It's one of those things where you get this cache of games, and then half the work is going to be finding all those. Yeah.
I've already seen articles saying like, "Hey, you probably got that. Like, here are things that are super good in that." Just because you might have trouble seeing here,
filtering. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Which, you know, exploring could be good too.
Spinning the wheel, splitting the deck, all that. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. Well, I hope all of you are safe. Hope all of you have a good week.
Yeah. Likewise.
You guys. Yeah.
Take care, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Have a good week.
Bye. Yep.